Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Libraries Podcast, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And Sam is joining us this morning with a book about the Beastie Boys. I've heard a lot of really good things about it, so I'm very excited to do this interview.
Yeah, despite the really creative title, it was a great, wonderful book. For the title is Beastie Boys Book. They really didn't go too far out with the title. It's great. It's a story about the Beastie Boys, like the group, and about them growing up in New York. And the thing I really enjoyed about it is about the group. It's not really about the members, about their personal lives. It's about what they did as a band and how they started and things they did together, how they met, and just, you know, through the stories of how they created their albums and all the stuff they did. You know, there was no like, and then Adam got married and, you know, this happened and was running around with this supermodel. There was none of that. So it was really cool that you just got to go in and immerse yourself in the music. And really, the more you read this, you realize how much of their life was spent in the studio or just making music together. And there probably wasn't that much to talk about otherwise. I mean, you know, they had families, but even that, they'd bring their families on tour and stuff like that. So it was a really enjoyable book just to get immersed into what they were doing. And if you're an older person like me who grew up with a lot of these albums, you're like, oh, wow. So it was really cool to have meanings dropped in on songs that you weren't expecting.
So one of the reasons why I really wanted you to talk about this book was at one point you were telling me about how at some of the chapters they would include like really bad reviews of their music.
Every single album they talk about, they usually preface it with like one of the worst reviews they got on it. And that was kind of their deal when they were talking about earlier in their years, they were a hardcore band. You know, people were talking about really deep, like political things, and all their lyrics were about stupid stuff. He's like, we always, even if we were into a music, we were more interested in kind of pointing out things to make fun of in it rather than take it completely seriously. And really, as odd as it sounded in the book, the one album they said they took the most serious, just because at least creating it, was Licensed to Ill, which was mostly them acting like they were the coolest people ever, and they weren't. And that's what was funny. You know, he said, we were just trying to put out this vibe. We were kind of making fun of, like, you know, the jockey people who made fun of us in high school and things like that, but we were also really serious about, we have to have this. Where in the future, they were just kind of like, whatever. So yeah, go back to one of the reviews they got. Like when Ill Communication came out, they did the review from Syncopation magazine. And so the whole deal was the reviewer talked about cooking dinner while he was listening to the album. And he'd be like, then this song came on. He goes, and yeah, I had to go flip over, you know, my paella or whatever. And I wasn't really paying attention. And when I came back, this song was on. And yeah, so then it was time to go back into the kitchen and do this. And then he'd come back. So the whole entire thing was just like, oh, and then this song was good. But at the next song, no, I ran off and I did this, you know. So it was just, and then he went into, you know, talking about dinner and how he met his friends and how one song had like a little bit of sitar in it, reminding this wonderful trip he had to India. So the entire album, like making fun of it, talking about his life, where he totally just dismissed the album. And I thought it was great that it was like, okay, we're getting to this big album of theirs, and it's like, here's a review about how the person did not care at all for the album.
It so, sounds kind of like he's comparing it to elevator music. Like, yeah, it was in the background. It was okay.
I have to ask, what was the one song that he said was good from that album?
It's called Sabrosa. It was like a kind of jazzy instrumental song. So that was the one he was really into. Was cool. Which was, as a kid, was funny to me. It was like, that was where I was first like, wow. It's like, you know, these guys are like actual musicians on top of this. They're not just these silly guys running around. So it was really cool. So it was this thing when they started playing instruments. They did the first two albums, and so like Licensed to Ill was them working with Rick Rubin, and then that kind of went terribly. So then they did all these cool things with samples for Paul's Boutique, which is like this landmark album, which is even funny. They talk about their good friend who was like, he's like, yeah, man, we gave it to our buddy that we really love, this other rapper, and he listened to it. He's like, yeah, man, there's like two songs in that album. He's like, no, man, you know, you didn't hear the whole thing. Like, was the tape blank? He's like, no, I heard it. There were two songs on that album. And so he said that was their new thing. Like, if someone gave him a record, they'd be like, yeah, man, there's like 1.5 songs on that album. So I always thought it was funny that they kind of pointed out how much people disliked their stuff. But after that album, they kind of started locking themselves away and got back to playing music, because they'd all three started out, like Beastie Boys started out as like a hardcore band in New York. And then they got really into rap. And one thing that was cool is they had a female drummer, Kate, is it Schellenbeck? She went off for the summer and came back and was like, yeah, man, I'm ready to start jamming again. They were like, oh, man, we're rapping now. And like
we're rappers now.
You don't really like fit what we're doing. So it just kind of phased her out. And rather than gloss over it, they were just like, we were terrible people and this is what we did. And, you know, we came from like all of our best friends really were female and stuff. Then we kind of started getting into playing this whole fight for your right to party thing. And what was great at the end of the tour for License to Ill, they were so bummed out by what they'd become and kind of that they like refused to do Fight for Your Right anymore live. Like they never did it again.
Wow.
And they were like, all these songs, like, this is just stupid. Like we actually started believing the caricatures we created and that's not who we are. So they kind of had to go to all their friends and be like, sorry, we suck. And everyone was like, oh, it's cool. You know, whatever. We thought they were funny. We got the joke. It's just, you know, when y'all started acting like it, we were like, do they get the joke that they made?
Do they get the joke?
And then when they finally realized it was cool. But and it ended up coming full circle because if y'all remember this band, Luscious Jackson, Kate was their drummer. And so Grand Royal, which was their record label they did for a while, put out their first albums and stuff. So it was cool. You know, everyone kind of made up at the end. Mm-hmm. But it was really bad. They came home and was like, we're the Beastie Boys now. I mean, they were always Beastie Boys with the female drummer. But then they're like, we're rapping and, you know, sorry, dude, it's just you're not there anymore.
So how did the band form?
That was the kind of the cool part about it is they were all just little weirdo punk kids that started hanging out. And what's funny, they first met at a Black Flag show at the Peppermint Lounge in New York was where they a few of them had a group together and they went. And then they said the other little oddball kid in the back that was like scared of getting in where like all the crazy DC kids were moshing. And it was funny, like all these New York kids were like, oh my God, what are these people doing? Like,
yeah.
DC had the big hardcore scene like Bad Brains, Minor Threat, all those bands. So they came and they were like business, like running around going crazy. And they're like, all the New York kids just kind of went to the back to stand and watch. They're like, we're not. No, like we're scared. And he's like, so we all met each other because we were all too scared to get involved in the insanity. So it was really funny that basically they met out of fear because they were just a bunch of little small skinny 15-year-olds. And that was it. And they started playing together. And, you know, one of the bands like Beastie Boys originally was just, I guess it was Mike D and MCA, which was Adam and Mike. And then they had a different guitar player and Kate was their drummer. And then when John Barry was in Quit, they added in Adam Horovitz was in another band. So he like joined their band because he always hung out with them. And that's when they became like what they did. And it was my favorite was the story about, you know, you always have those like defining moments for a band. And they decided they were going to go, they'd made some money. Was it United Airways used a song of theirs in a commercial without asking them.
Oh, yeah.
So they were able to sue them and get $40,000.
Wow.
And I mean, these are like little kids. They're like, oh my God, we got money. So Adam Horovitz went in, which you'll know him as King Ad-Rock from the band, if you don't only know their performing names, went in to buy this Rickenbacker he'd been wanting because it was just like a guitar player he really looked up to. And at this, for the same price, there was a TR-808 sitting there, which is a drum machine, which was like, you know, that's what created hip-hop, was like that drum machine. Everyone had it. And so he's like, well, you know, I've been listening to a lot of hip-hop records lately, and it'd be really cool maybe to have this instead. So he bought the drum machine instead of the guitar he'd been wanting, and then it's, you know, it turned into going the world, touring all over, and doing all sorts of fun stuff. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Now, is there anything in the book? My favorite part of biographies or books about bands or people is learning something that you would have never imagined about them. Is there anything in there that like really surprised you about the band or the people in the band?
For the Beastie Boys at the time, I know they came from New York. They did stuff. They were one of Def Jam's first bands and stuff like that. But just how immersed they were in the whole hip-hop scene, how many other different groups were like, man, you know, they had... You know, they came and guessed on this. They helped us with this. Like the coolest for me, I had no idea, is they actually bought a warehouse between, I guess before Check Your Head came out, and made their own recording studio, started their own thing. And they were kind of these people that something would pop in their head and they're like, well, yeah, let's do it. Apparently Adam Yauch was one of these people that just knew everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they keep going back to that. It's like, this is before the internet. Like, how did you know this? Like you can pull out, and that's something they keep referencing. Yeah. It's not like you can pull out a cell phone, but how do I do this? And he said, Yauch would just come in and be like, hey, man, I heard about this. We should do it. And he's like, so they started doing all this crazy stuff. And so they built their own recording studio. They put like a skate ramp in and all this stuff.
Dude.
They had skateboarders and rappers would come through and other musicians. And they set up a rehearsal space. And they just hung out and would play together like 8 hours a day and do that. And then they would record everything and then eventually go, well, this part sounded really cool. Let's loop it. And that'll be on this song.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be this. So it was really cool. Thought that was the most fun part. Another good bit of trivia was, if you ever saw their live concert video they did, I'll leave the title out just because there's profanity in it, but it was, they played at Madison Square Garden, and they gave all these people in the audience cameras, like 100 cameras or something. So Adam Yauch decided to do that, like, not long before the show, like a couple of days before. He's like, I'm going to go do this. So he went to Best Buy and bought all the video cameras they had. And the miracle was, not only did he get them out and get them all back, that he put them all back in the box and returned them to Best Buy the next day.
Wow.
So all the videos, the cameras that were used for that documentary, if you bought them from, like, you know, I guess the Times Square Best Buy, then you probably have one of those camcorders.
That's hilarious.
There's a lot of interesting, weird facts in here. Mm-hmm. Another good thing is, if you look in the margins, other people will comment, like if Adam Horovitz wrote a chapter and Mike D was like, no, that's not what happened.
And they just stuff, actually added it in.
There's the stuff side. Where it's like, actually, you know, like, this never happened. This is completely wrong. And then another color underneath, it'll be like, no, dude, this totally happened. I have this, you're wrong. And then just, there's points where they have arguments in the margins of the book. Or other people, like, there's a point where they were talking about the song Egg Radio Mojo. Like, yeah, you know, this dude we knew, he was like our friend from all the shows. He worked at this club and he wouldn't let us in. So we went and we threw eggs at him. And, like, Kate was just in the margin, like, no matter what these people say, this never happened. We never did this. They're lying. And they just put it in the book, you know? So it was always great that they did stuff like that. And there's like a cookbook in here. There's all sorts of weird things that they do. And if you pick it up, it looks like it's, you know, it's bigger than the Bible. It looks like it's going to take forever to read, but there's a ton of photos. And weird. There's like a graphic novel in the middle of it.
So, that makes sense.
There's all sorts of stuff. This book had to cost a fortune to print.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's just more crazy
stuff. It's huge. There are like glossy pages. Some pages are just pictures for pages and pages.
Yeah. So it's really neat book. And if you're into it, I mean, I feel like it may help to be in the VC Awards. I mean, it probably does. But even without it, if you're just into music, period, and the stuff they did and who they touched, and they go through and lay out mixtapes, people they listened to who got them into music.
Yeah.
And there's points in the books like, close the book, put it down, and turn on this.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, listen to this song and then come back, which was also a really good touch. So, and while I read the book, I actually went through their discography, like on, you know, Amazon Music, and listened to it like while the albums they were talking about it. Which was a cool touch. It kind of added a whole new element to it.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about in the book? Anything else that
jumps out?
Yeah, that jumps out.
No, I mean, I just think it's a good journey. I mean, if you read this, just to see how these kids went from little kids playing bar chords on, you know, really loud guitars and screaming about, you know, cops on the subway to like an international, you know, hip hop group, mm-hmm. and who played with all these different people and just by dumb luck found their way into stuff, and they were completely self-aware. I've read a lot of musician biographies where it's just like, I'm the greatest, and when I did this, it changed the world.
I've always been gifted.
Yeah, and they're just like, dude, we somehow ended up here, we don't know how, and this happened, and we're doing this, and it was great. So it was an interesting read, and just to hear them go off on some of the crazy stuff like Adam Yauch did, he was very big on just like, hey, man. At the beginning, they talk about he went on a flight and they landed in Australia for the first time. They're all freaked out. And he just comes up, hey, man, I met some people on the plane. We're going to go snowboarding and I'll see you at sound check in 3 days.
Wow.
And it's like, oh, okay, like, hope he shows up.
Bye.
But,
you know,
he always made it through. So it was really cool.
Okay, so I guess we're going to get to the game show portion. It's a little different because of the format of the book. You obviously can't cast the Beastie Boys as anything, but we'll put some music in here.
Oh, come on. What if you put them in a movie? What movie would you put them in?
There you go. Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be like a, you
add
know,
them into a movie.
Three Stooges. They kind of have that whole fitting thing.
Maybe like Who Framed Roger Rabbit? I feel like that's like weird enough that they could fit in there somewhere in the animated or non-animated portion.
You ever see, like, I watched a couple of interviews, and if you see, like, Mike D still has the voice of like a 13-year-old boy. So
he's like,
hey guys, it's really great. I can't even do that high pitch, but it was funny that, you know, he would totally be a cartoon character. He could do the voice, no problem.
So I have to ask this, what is your favorite Beastie Boys song? And you can only pick one.
My favorite album there is Zill Communication, just because that was the first one I bought. Song, I will go off that album. Root Down's really cool. I like that one a lot.
Okay.
But there's a lot, so.
There is a lot. They made a lot of music. So, yes. Your answer to what your favorite song is yes.
Is Root Down. I'll go with that one.
Okay. Good choice.
Because you got jazz in there and you got, you know.
What's one of the recipes in the book?
Let me go.
And do you think it goes with it?
Oh, yeah. The recipes were... So, one of the funny ones is this goes into a story.
Sounds of Science.
Is they have the... He made this one that's like the Eggman, which is all these different type of egg dishes. Or one of the stories, they were talking about how they had a guy who came as like a road manager, tour manager, and like his assistant. And they went to this place, and the guy sat down. I was like, what do you want? He's like, I want 10 fried eggs. And like, what else? Like, nah, that's it. So the guy that's their chef buddy made the Eggman, which is you got to make it with a dozen eggs, 6 for the omelet, 6 for the fried, plus 2 more for hard-boiled yolk. So you've got 6 eggs, half cup milk, salt, pepper, olive oil, butter, box of sea urchin uni, and a tin of caviar or jar of salmon eggs. So you have like all these different multiple types of eggs. You have sea urchin eggs, caviar, salmon eggs, and chicken eggs all together.
I feel like eggs were mentioned a lot in this interview. Like they threw eggs at someone, but not really, says Kate. Also, they have an egg recipe because one guy that they like
that has all yeah, the eggs.
All the eggs.
And the best part is the egg so story weird. Is the graphic novel.
Oh,
so that's in the middle of it. Which it's hard to find. Some of these, like I said, but it's really funny that it's just, there's a great draw, you know, graphic representation of their. And this tour manager, they did not see until someone, they wasn't sure if he was actually with them until someone attacked him on stage and the tour manager ran out and punched the guy. So.
They didn't know if the tour manager was with them?
No, they knew about him. They were paying with him. They had the guy who picked him up and drove him around and was like, yeah, I'm the tour manager's assistant. Like, well, what about, you know, where's he at? It's like, well, he's over in his hotel room. They're like, we never saw him. And then someone jumped up on stage and took a swing at him, and he ran up and, like, knocked the guy off the stage. And, like, got all crazy. So, yeah. So, it was really fun. So some of the stories are just like, wow. Because they were, you know, kids from New York, and they got, like, when they went on tour with Madonna, they had no idea. They just got dumped on the West Coast with a car. They're like, all right, here's where you need to be on these days. And they were like, okay, cool. And they just drove around and did all this crazy stuff, you know, before there were maps and things like that.
Okay, so I want to know, did they drop names of any of the people who came to their giant skateboarding rehearsal space warehouse?
Well, a good one was Jason Lee used to hang out there quite a bit, apparently, which y'all may know from, like, you know, My Name is Earl, Kevin Smith movies. But a lot of people don't realize that he was a really, you know, award-winning professional skater for years and years before that. Huh. Like when X Games was like created multiple moves. I think 360 flip was like his signature move that he created for
so this was like a warehouse for a subculture, not just for musicians.
Yeah, like, you know, they talk about like, oh, like, you know, when Tribe Called Quest came into town, they did this, and that's when they were recording Ill Communication. So Q-Tip did a verse on their song because it's like, hey man, get on the mic and do this. Like, okay.
Why not?
You know, one of my favorite was talking about when Biz Markie came in. And then he did, in the Check Your Head, there's a part where he just does this whole, BC boy coming home. You've heard Biz Markie, I'm sure you know, like, baby, you got what I need and all that. But they're like, it's like the best Biz Markie story they had was he showed up and he calls like, yo, man, it's Biz, I'm downstairs, I'm fixing to come up. And they're like, okay. And he goes, so we didn't see him for 2 more years after that phone call. Something distracted him and he just left and he didn't come back. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, sure. Read us an excerpt. This is a huge book, like you mentioned, but read us a little bit that jumps out at you. It's kind of hard to do the rolling of the dice because so many pages are just pictures.
Or filled with obscenities.
So we're just going to go ahead and do Dealer's Choice.
Yeah, there are a few obscenities because they just...
I don't think it's surprising.
Yeah, for I mean, it's very conversational. Page 2. Yauk wanted to see the world, so he did.
Sounds like it.
Which was a good intro because, you know, it's the kind of opens with a bit of darkness because Adam Yauch died, you know, multiple years ago from cancer. So, you know, when they're writing this retrospective book, one of them wasn't there. So it made it very, it's that kind of, well, we'd still be going if Adam was still alive, you know. So it's like, here's where we're at. So, so to end on a down note.
Yep.
Everyone have a good week.
Thank you for joining us and bringing a very cool book to talk about.
So. Yeah, definitely not something that we would normally get, but I'm glad that you brought it to us.
And talked so long about it.
Yeah, it's a big book.
Was that like 25 minutes? Yeah. Like
21.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, your 4 minutes off.
I'm going.
And on that note, bye.